Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
In the morning, 720 WGN. It is the Steve Cochran Show. Yep, a lot of rain out there. Leave a little extra early. Jen's watching the roads for you. Pretty bad out there, huh, Jen?
Yeah. Oh, everything's starting to build super quickly and spin outs, high standing water. Dogs and cats living together.
So leave now. Leave now. You have to be at work at 9. Leave now. Jen's going to be monitoring traffic for us all morning long. And for Mary Vandeveld, Dave Ennett, good Bears victory. Just want to say, Grzanich and I picked the Bears. We just want to say that
I did too. I thought they'd win. I believe that Mr. Cochran and Mr. No, this was not in the Wang Dang.
No, this is separate from the Wang Dang Doodle. Yeah.
Picks, but I think that I was the lone voice calling for a Bear. I actually had them winning by one. Yeah. I did not have them winning by two touchdowns.
Grzanich and I picked the Bears, but I think our score is going to be wrong, Steve. I think we were a little ambitious with the score, but at least
it was kind of close though.
At least we won, right?
Right, exactly.
At least we got a victory going on.
We get the points for winning, right?
There you go, exactly. And wet and rainy morning. Rain's going to continue with us. I think off and on all throughout the day, but like Steve mentioned earlier, 40s for the high this week.
Yeah, how about that?
There's some places north and west of here that could actually see their first snow later this week, like in Minnesota.
Come on, Steve.
You know, I know.
Stop.
You know it's getting bad when you go, oh, well, it's going to be 50 by Wednesday.
Yeah.
52.
Don't we have a round of golf scheduled this week?
Oh, yeah, we do. I think that might be canceled.
I'm not sure about that.
It's taken us this long. Me, you, Steve, Mary, we've been trying to play a round together since, what, April?
Yeah,
but we did the Medina outing or the Patriot
right,
golf outing.
But you have to consider that you and I were all set to play, but there's one person in our group who has been ducking us.
Mm-hmm. So I think though, Dave, I might be ducking on if it's only 50 on Thursday, then I'm going to be ducking.
I think that
then
might be it. Yes.
Rainy and cold.
Might be the end.
There's got to be a limit. Well, top six at six coming up. Got a great show for you as always. Ryan Noble's on the program. Hamp, Coach Ditka, Doc Most, and a big announcement from Governor Rauner this morning right here on the Steve Cochran Show. 6:15 in the morning. Let's get you all caught up on traffic into Traffic Central. And here's Jen again.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
I want to get ahead of myself. Big 7 o'clock hour coming up on the show with Hamp, Governor Rauner, and Ryan Knowles. Now, Governor Rauner was just on the other day. Why would he be on today, do you think?
Big announcement.
Well, do you think I guilted him into it?
I think you did.
Governor Rauner will be in studio this morning. Here's item number one. Senator John McCain took a swipe at President Trump. We've only been waiting for this for 2 years. Ever since he said McCain wasn't really a hero and McCain always took the high road. Over the weekend, he talked about the fact that we drafted the lowest economic level of Americans and the highest economic level found a doctor who would give him a deferment for a bone spur.
Oh my God.
That was Trump's specific excuse for not going into the Vietnam War.
Right.
President, no Twitter response yet, is there?
Not yet. Not okay. That I've seen. But it's been a minute. Hold on.
Item number two, President Trump announced he would not block the release of a final batch of documents related to the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy, which has to be done by, I think it's this Friday. Mm-hmm. So these last documents are believed to maybe contain information on why Lee Harvey Oswald had a private meeting in Moscow with some communist affiliates. Other than that, we don't know what they may say. But I'm sure Oliver Stone will be in there somewhere.
I'm forward to seeing these.
Yes. Yeah, I think we all are. Yeah. And remember, at one point, Chuck Barris may have been involved, the guy from The Gong Show?
There's also a rumor that aliens had something to do with it, so we'll find out.
That was a Weekly World News story, wasn't it?
I
cover
so.
Story?
Yep.
Yeah. Last January, after Fox News ousted its chairman, Roger Ailes, amid a sexual harassment scandal, the network's top-rated host at the time, Bill O'Reilly, we now know, struck a $32 million settlement. $32 million settlement with a longtime network analyst on the legal side for sexual harassment and or assault allegations. How much damage do you have to have done to write a check for $32 million?
Boy, no kidding. That's outrageous.
That's part one. Part two of this story was, it was at least the sixth agreement and by far the largest made by either Mr. O'Reilly or the company. And immediately following it, Fox re-signed O'Reilly, now saying they knew that there was a settlement, but they didn't know the amount. How does that make it better?
And then didn't they give him like $25 million a year?
They gave him $25 million a year, which, of course, he immediately lost because there was a clause in the new contract that said if he embarrasses the network. You know, the same clause we all have in contracts. The clause that says if you embarrass your employer in some way or involved in some sort of alleged criminal activity and that type of thing, they have the right to sue you and fire you, I should say, for cause.
That's not in your contract, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've got that.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember how many times you've tried to institute that clause?
I know. Yeah. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Mr. O'Reilly says it's a witch hunt. I think that's the word to use. Next. Puerto Rico is still a horrible mess and still trying to dig out from the effects of a hurricane that now is over a month ago. But many are still waiting for FEMA in Texas and Florida. FEMA officials say they're successfully dealing with enormous challenges posed by an onslaught of closely spaced disasters, unlike anything the agency has seen in years. But on the ground, flooded residents and local officials have a far more critical view, not just in Puerto Rico, but also in Houston and in Miami. More on that story to come, to be sure. And as mentioned by someone who looked like me just moments ago, Governor Rauner expected to announce he will seek a second term as governor with an announcement, which he is going to make on his show in a little bit.
Yes, he is. Good.
Everybody else is reporting it this morning, but he's coming in here.
You know, I saw last Thursday on television, I saw a Rauner commercial.
What do you mean?
It was in the middle of one of the shows I normally watch on Thursday night. It looked like a campaign commercial.
Did it say he'd be coming in Monday?
It didn't say he'd be coming in Monday, but it certainly looked like a campaign commercial. So,
but you didn't report on it at the time.
I did not, because I thought I may have been half asleep. But
do you regret the fact that you didn't report on it at the time? Are you having a meeting with yourself?
I regret I didn't ask the question when he was here on Friday. I should have told you guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, about the commercial?
No, commercial, yeah.
No apology necessary.
But I didn't really watch the show until over the weekend. It was DVR. So.
Was it Grey's Anatomy? Come on. Was it Grey's Anatomy?
It was Will and Grace.
Oh, Will and Grace.
I like how the DVR is slowing down journalism.
I know.
That was Will and Grace.
And we have a Super Bowl halftime performer. Anyone?
JT.
JT, oh, look at you. Oh,
is he bringing sexy back to the
look
Super Bowl?
The Davis.
Yeah, Dave.
Justin Timberlake will perform during halftime of the Super Bowl 14 years after his wardrobe malfunction incident with Janet Jackson. Do we know, speaking of John F. Kennedy, there was a second boob behind the grassy knoll in that instance. And we also believe that was staged.
Oh, completely staged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you guys know that for a fact?
But it got the network in big trouble for a while.
Yes, and there were fines
staged
and troubles, and nobody knows. We'll come back, get the big story, which is about what?
It is going to be about President Trump and the war of words continuing with the Florida congresswoman about the widow killed in Niger.
So classy. American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, bring you the top six at six. Back after this.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now. He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Moose right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Before we talk to Dr. Moose, I have to remove my helmet with the laser lights in it that I wear to re-stimulate the hair follicles. And I always have to, first off, I put on the Rogaine, and then I have to dry out the Rogaine because the laser lights don't agree with the Rogaine, and then I take the pill that causes erectile dysfunction. What's that pill called?
How's this all working for you, Steve?
Well, you tell me. I think my hair's never looked better. Dr. Kevin Most now joins us with the great mystery of hair loss. Good morning, Doc.
Hey, Steve. How are you guys doing over there?
Well, we're doing fine. Easy for you to say, a doctor with a nice head of hair, but... Surprised we didn't cover this topic, say, around 2002 or 3, but, you know, whatever, whatever. So 50 million men have hair loss problems?
Yep, 50 million men, about 30 million women. So, you know, it's obviously a problem, and it's a problem, but it's not a problem, right? People, it's more about, you know, how do I look and how do I feel about how I look? And
obviously, it doesn't bother me.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought it would be cruel if I lost my hair because of the melon this size. It would just, you know, it would just be very, very apparent. But I think as long as I, you know, go high and tight on the haircut, I look sort of like a mob enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. See, I like it. I like it. I like that cut as opposed to, say, the Ron Howard look. You know, now we're seeing more on This Is Us, but he's got that weird, he's balding, obviously, but he's just letting it grow out, and it's like a circular comb over.
Yeah, and it got weird for me in the last couple of years before I started buzz cutting it, because, I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan, but if you remember, George had a problem where his hair would just suddenly go in all different directions, and mine started to look like that. My hair looked like, it looked like refugees running for the border when I woke up in the morning. It just, they were all going in different directions. It was very sad. And that's when I decided to just go ahead and shave it down. So, and I can do it myself once in a while. It's not a great idea. I still, you know, think I should go and get it cut.
Oh, you actually pay to go have that done?
Yes, yes, okay, actually I do. Curious. But, Doc, enough about me. What about you?
No, but Steve, you know, we laugh about it, but, you know, male pattern baldness is something that's, like we said, extremely common and kind of aggravates people sometimes. And we're really starting to look at the science of hair, and it's actually fascinating. You know, your head, when you had it, when you had hair there, you had...
I like the way you said that, but go ahead.
You had somewhere between 100,000 and 150,000 hair follicles on your head.
Yeah, now I've got 9.
Right, and they would... They would produce hair, uh-huh. And some of them would go into what we call a rest pattern, and others would continue to grow, and they would kind of alternate back and forth. What's happened with male pattern baldness is the ones that went into rest pattern never come back to the active. So as you start to lose them, they don't come back to active, and therefore you have the male pattern baldness that we're seeing.
Well, didn't you just describe the cure to baldness, that you have to wake up the ones that are resting?
Exactly.
So how come we don't know how to do that yet?
Well, that's the big thing. That's what they're studying right now.
I mean, Doc, it's too late for me, but we can save the young ones.
You know, it's not too late for you, to be honest with you. I mean, that's if this science pans out, and there's been two big studies that are going on right now, and it's kind of ironic that they're both in California, but UCLA and USC are kind of in a race to say, all right, which one of these is going to pan out best, and which one's going to be the first to market?
Sandberg, come in here. I need you and Jen and Andrea on this. When we come back, Doc, we're going to talk about females' opinions. Not me, but females' opinions of the men in general. Because the President of the United States has, and no one else, I don't think has ever had this, literally has a triple comb over. And I've asked professionals about this. It is a triple comb over, not just your traditional comb over, but growing it long in the back and long in the side and then flopping those two pieces over. Which means coming out of the shower has got to be pretty grim. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the studies you're referring to. We'll talk about what I think is a much more serious issue, and that's women's thinning hair.
Yep.
Men have it easy. Women are, you know, in a large part, define themselves sometimes by their hair. And for women who have thinning hair, it's pretty traumatic, I'm sure.
Yep.
All right, so we'll get to that coming up, 6:47. First, we go to Jen and Mary with the traffic. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better, talking about hair loss. You know, this rain we have this morning, Doc, it just does crazy things to my stubble. It's just completely out of control this morning. I've asked Sandberg and Andrea and Jen DeSalvo in for Mary this morning to have the microphones on for this, because before we get to the next element of this serious discussion, take Trump out of it, obviously take me out of it. When a guy starts to go bald, what do you prefer to see, Andrea, in his hair?
I would just say take it down. I would use the
take
clippers.
It down.
Use the clippers if you want to buzz it. If you want to do a closer cut, I would rather see that than loose hairs kind of floating from the sides.
Let it go. You're not fooling anybody.
Don't like the comb over look at all. Just take it down.
Sandberg?
I agree with Andrea. I'd like it shaved down, like as tight as you can get it. So
right, because you can still have the rim.
Yes,
the rim of hair,
which
but
isn't
the less
necessary
hair,
to
the
me.
Less hair you have there, the better.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yes, I do.
Jen, you agree with that?
I definitely agree with it. I think shave it all off.
You think the bald look?
The bald looks good, and that, but my grandpa had that rim, and that was cute. That was cute on him. I like that.
Right. Right, and, but I think if you do leave too much hair on the rim becomes the focal point, and you go, wow, that dude got old.
Like Larry David has a long rim.
Yeah.
And it's kind of...
Like Bernie Sanders.
What about the bald guys who grow it long and back?
No.
Huh.
I know someone who does that. He puts it in like a little ponytail. I don't like that. Mm. I'm sorry. He's a nice guy, but I don't like that.
What if you have a faux hawk where you just have two strips on either side?
I don't know if I've ever seen that one.
Yeah,
I think
God,
a faux hawk is the point on the top of your head. It's not just
it
on the side.
What it is? Yeah.
Although I do like, and I've told you this, I think we've said this to you before, I like how you keep it short, but then on the top, the little fuzzies. You know what I mean?
Not, I can't help
you
that.
Can still
it grows
see
like
some hair.
It grows like the forest up
That's
there. It's
cute.
Crazy.
That's cute.
Doc, I don't know if I ever told you this, but a couple years ago now, but the woman who cuts my hair, yes, I have one. The woman who cuts my hair was fake cutting my hair to finish a story. Oh. Like she had no more hair to cut. And I heard the scissors like clicking. And I look up and they're like a half an inch above my hairline just so she could finish the story.
Oh. It's a quick appointment, though. You don't have to linger.
On the new Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David gets a haircut for $150 for that hair.
Yes, exactly. Oh. Yeah, I'm not quite in that area. All right. And Doc, let's talk about the speaking of the women on the show, let's talk about what women go through with this.
Yeah, and you did make a good point when you started there. You know, men can do exactly what everyone was just talking about there and still look okay.
Presentable.
Correct. Where women, it really is part of their body, part of their makeup. And so when it thins, and it does thin in women, not as much as men, but we still have quite a few women with thinning hair. So it's one of the concerns. Now, can women use the Rogaines, you know, the minoxidils and that? They can. They really don't work very well in most people, but that will at least help them at least save some of their hair and at least make it more full. But again, it's these the two studies, the thing that's coming out would help both men and women.
Doc, is there any truth to the rumor of stress hair loss? Because before my cousin's wedding, she started to lose a little bit of her, she got very long hair. But then that went away, but her hair was falling out, and she said, oh, it's because of stress. That can happen?
Absolutely. Aging, hormone imbalance, stress, definitely. Chemotherapy, you know, those are just a few. Thyroid disease, there's a few, you know, there's more reasons than just the normal male pattern balding that can cause hair loss.
You notice how Annette hasn't said anything?
Right.
Well, no.
He's got great hair.
He's got a great head of hair. What'd you say, Jen?
I do have a question. Are there any vitamins or supplements that you can take to prevent this type of thing from happening?
Not really, to be honest with you. There's nothing. It's unfortunate because what it is as we were talking before, hair follicles go in from an active stage to an inactive stage. So if what we really need to do is find out something that's going to keep them in that active stage. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there aren't any vitamins or nutrients or anything that can. But now UCLA has done the drug one. UCLA has found a drug, actually, that in mice blocks that so that it has to produces chemical, which keeps it in the active phase. So that's the UCLA study using a medication to keep it in the active study.
But that's different than Propecia?
Absolutely. Totally different. Propecia and minoxidil, essentially. Minoxidil was a drug that when they were first testing it, it was for blood pressure. So lower blood pressure. And what it found, actually, is that it increases the blood flow to the scalp and allows for the head of hair to get more blood flow to actually get more growth in the hair follicles. So it's kind of interesting how it was thought to be used for one thing, but ends up being for something else.
The Propecia, one of the main things that came up with Propecia was, you might grow your hair, but you'll have erectile dysfunction. Is that still the side effect?
Well, you know, there's side effects with all medications in some people, and it is going to be one of the ones, unfortunately, there. I think the more fascinating one is the USC study, which just came out last week, which what they're doing at USC is they're taking stem cells, which we have on our skin already, And they're convincing those stem cells, they're manipulating them to become hair follicles. So no medications whatsoever. All they're really doing is advancing a stem cell from its position of initial where it can go into be just normal skin, can become nails, can become hair. They're trying to find it and say, all right, what we're going to do is take this group of stem cells and make you into hair follicles and now put those hair follicles back into the scalp, and you're going to have normally growing hair.
What do you think about the hair transplant business?
You know, it is a big business, and you especially, I don't know if you've driven to O'Hare lately, you pass, you know, seven billboards uh-huh. from that store. It's yeah. either, you know, Urlacher, Sandberg, the whole way there.
Right.
Expensive, but it works, and it's actually taking the hair from the back of your head, which for some reason doesn't go away and doesn't go into that sleep mode, and putting it back into the top of your crown of your head. If you're looking for the hair look, you know, that's definitely one of the best ways right now. Much better than Rogaine or Propecia.
Do you know why hair can grow out of your ears but not on the top of your head anymore?
Well, you know, hairs in the ears are, again, every time we have hair somewhere, mm-hmm. it's usually to protect us. It's mm-hmm. trying to protect something. So people that have a lot of hair in their ears, it was actually a protective measure to keep dirt and dust out of the ear.
But why more as you get older? I mean, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about other people.
Yeah, you know, again, it's something that hasn't turned off those areas. So for some reason, those areas, the hair follicles don't turn off, don't slow down. They just continue.
I have a question for you guys. Do men notice other men's new hair? Like, would you go up to, say, Dave if he got new hair and say, well, I like your hair?
No.
Are you judgmental
not.
Like us?
No, you would only say it to Lou Manfredini or other people because they have told you that they got new hair. Otherwise, you wouldn't comment on it.
Would you talk about it behind his back like, oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, we would be judgmental. Okay. All right, a couple of texters. You don't prune a dead tree. I shave it. That's one texter, 773. Please ask the doctor. A dermatologist put my 15-year-old son on Rogaine for a receding hairline. Is that too young?
It's really not. It's one of those unfortunate things. There's a genetic portion of this as well. So if your father was bald, there's a good chance that you are going to go that direction as well. So again, it's someone who's 15, and if it's really starting to be evident, that can be pretty devastating at someone at that age going through the social changes that they're going through. So to keep their hair, it's probably not a bad thing. And if it works and it helps him a little bit and helps his self-esteem and gets him through a point where he can be comfortable with it, then good for them.
As you know, Doc, I spent over $1.8 million on Rogaine before I quit using it. But one of the reasons was when I started using Rogaine, the rap was, if you stop using it, you go back to the hair loss you had. In other words, it was blocking it from getting worse. True, not true?
True. That is the bad thing about Rogaine. You have to continue to use it in order for it to work, because what it's doing is it's widening the hair follicle, which it's prolonging that growth phase. But once that chemical is gone, it slows that down, narrows the hair follicle, and goes into the rest phase. And then you're keeping your fingers crossed that it comes out of that rest phase and becomes active again.
And a helpful listener says, fun fact, humans have the same number of hair follicles as chimps. You know, the listeners are very helpful, Doc.
Yeah.
They're very helpful. If you have time, we want to bring you back later this week to talk about the continuation of the opioid crisis. But if people want more news about these two studies in particular related to hair loss, and again, for all the goofing around here, I really feel for women who deal with this because yep. it's a way different deal than men. Where do they go to find out about these studies?
You can look at I sent you guys some great notes there. You
right, we will
that.
Post those.
And the other would be, if you really want to see what's going on with the stem cell one, just Google Keck School of Medicine, USC School of Medicine, and it talks about the study and what's going on there. Again, both of these are still just in mice.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Samuel couldn't hold it.
The study looks like Phil Spector.
Scooped up down the sideline. Eddie Jackson. Jackson, it's a foot race. And he's going to win it. Touchdown, Bears.
It's 7-1. Doc, thank you. Yeah, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Making people better by making medicine better. And
Jackson is still going. Defensive highlight, touchdown Bears. The magic number is 75. A 75-yard fumble return for a touchdown and a 75-yard interception return for another score.
Championship.
Well, break up the Bears. I'm telling you right now. Look out, NFL. Packers lose. Vikings won, but Yeah. Lions were off, right? Was there a bye week, I think?
Yes, correct.
But the Bears win yesterday with the most powerful offensive weapon in football, Eddie Jackson. Let's go to Hamp, the Hall of Famer, brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com. How happy were you with that defensive effort yesterday?
Well, it was good. It was really good. You know, kind of a work of art on offense, right? Five first downs, two of them coming late in the game and kill the clock mode. But
it's not good when Trent Dilfer calls and goes, you should pass more. I mean, you can't win in the NFL consistently by throwing the ball seven times, but it worked yesterday.
Well, it's not a mode that we're going to try to, you know, build on. But here's the thing, and I remember, you know, before the Super Bowl, it was kind of like growing pains, and you just find ways to get the job done, and that's what they've done the last 2 weeks. And although the offense has, shown spurts and fits here and there, they did not self-destruct and lose the game. You know, at some point, you gotta just say, wow, hey, some extraordinary plays on defense. The defense set the tone early and basically took Cam Newton completely out of what he was, you know, thinking was going to be a, you know, stroll in the park kind of Sunday afternoon. And then capitalizing on those mistakes, the next thing you know, we've got a 2-touchdown lead. And that's not the easiest thing in the world to do, is basically maintain that. Look at the Jets yesterday. They had a 14-point lead and had put the opponent's quarterback out of commission, and yet they still lose. So you got to just tip the cap and say, hey, by hook or crook, the defense has been extraordinary the last 2 weeks. Actually, go back to the Minnesota game. I didn't realize this, but if you think about it, they have only allowed a field goal in the first half of three straight NFL games. Now, I don't know, you know, how many
That's
times
impressive.
We did that. So I'm just saying they're doing some pretty special stuff, and some of the young kids are really, really showing they're going to be pretty special players.
You know, you go back to the first four games of the season, Hamp, prior to Trubisky being installed at quarterback.
The Glennon years. Yes.
Exactly. The Bears were -7 in takeaway giveaway in the turnover ratio. Since Trubisky was installed as the starter for the Minnesota game, they're +2. Now, I'm not saying that's all his doing, but definitely the one thing they have avoided doing is playing giveaway with the ball. They had no turnovers yesterday for the first time since their opener against the Atlanta Falcons, a game they should have won. And, you know, I mean, it's made a huge difference for them.
You know, it's sort of like life. You know, you see, you know, like in school, if you let a few people get away with stuff, everybody thinks they can too. Well, guess what? Mike Glennon had 8 turnovers in 4 games.
Right.
Now, I don't know what kind of deodorant you wear every morning, but there ain't one strong enough to mask or hide that. So, yes, once you start, you know, and there is sort of a point of accountability where you say, we can't go, we can no longer tolerate this. Well, everything changes, and everybody, you know, they start realizing, hey, we can't turn the ball over. We can't squander. We can't waste opportunities. And so things did change, but, you know, and we got this on the radio quite a bit yesterday was, oh, well, how are we going to know what Trubisky's going to be? We didn't really use him. We didn't really let him get it. Well, at some point, you know, and I made the analogy, you don't have to make birdie if somebody hits it out of bounds. You know, you just got to stay in it. And that's what we did on offense. And, yeah, there were some, you know, he took 4 sacks. 3 of those probably could have got rid of the ball, could have, you know, got the ball out quicker.
He's learning.
But at some point, caution, you know, you start hearing that, you know, that buzzer go off, and you're like, hey, don't make a mistake. And so all these things, and it's amazing. And not to, you know, you've never done it, but I remember everybody kind of sneers at watching film. You know, we call it film, and they call it tape now, but you learn so much in that film session, because not only do you see what what you did, you see what was possible, what could have been done, and that's what's going to be, you know, paying dividends for this kid down the stretch here, And, you know, as we move forward, he's going to realize, hey, all those situations, there was a way out. There's a way to avoid a sack or a bad throw or a bad decision. So these are learning, you know, experiences that he's just got to go through.
Before I let you go, Governor Rauner just walked in. I assume you're pro-Bears, Governor?
Co-Bears.
Pro-Bears, go-Bears. That's probably the easiest question you've ever been asked, ever. Hamp, who's next?
Well, we're headed down to New Orleans, and we'll see if our defense can handle a little guy named Drew Brees, who is playing pretty well right now.
Did you ever have a good time in New Orleans, Hamp? I'm just curious. I seem to remember a pretty good night for you guys in New Orleans.
There was one night that was pretty special. We'll talk about it today. And you're going to ask Dick about how much fun he had in New Orleans. Remember, he was a coach there for 3 years.
Yeah, well, it might be a different take from one game to that in that era. All right, Hall of Famer, thank you.
See you Friday.
The coach, Mike Dick, on the Bears. Coming up here in a few minutes, my friend Tim Cavanaugh later. The big story coming up in a couple minutes, sponsored by iWantSmart.com. Why don't we start it early? The big story?
Oh, I was gonna make this our big story.
Yeah, let's do that.
Want to do it now?
Yeah, let's do it right now.
All right, very good. Very important announcement this morning from our governor, Governor Rauner, in studio. How are you, Governor?
Yeah, good morning. Great to be back with you guys. Big news. Very exciting. We're kicking off the reelection campaign. Critical time for the state of Illinois. We've made great progress over the last 3 years, but we got a lot of work yet to go. And we've got to change our system, and we're going to get it done.
Let me ask you about a couple of things. I noticed in the video you're riding a motorcycle across Illinois. Is that to save money? I mean, I could loan you a few bucks for an Uber.
There you go. I'm a passionate motorcycle rider. I have been since I was a kid. I used to race motocross in high school. No, I love love riding with veterans and police officers and firefighters and first responders around the state. I do it all the time.
How's your staff feel about that?
Well, some want to be out there with me. Others like waving from the car window.
Yeah.
Right. But you're a good, safe rider.
All the time. I wear a helmet and ride safe. But, you know, I was really out. I love traveling the state and meeting with the people of Illinois. We have such great people. We have such a wonderful state. We have unlimited potential, except our system's broken. It's really not working. Our government's not working for people. And I ran for governor originally to change it, to fundamentally shake up our system so we can get more jobs, we get more economic opportunity, we can bring down our tax burden and have a government that's efficient and working for people, and a political system that's not rigged for the insiders and the career politicians who term limits and a system that really works. So we've made progress, but we've got a lot of work to do, and we're going to keep going at it.
Where are we on term limits?
Well, I tell you, we got 600,000 signatures a few years ago. I helped lead that effort. People in Illinois overwhelmingly want term limits on our politicians. We got the signatures to do a petition to get it on the ballot. Mike Madigan had his personal lawyer sue and block it, and his judges kept it off the ballot. So now our only option is for legislators to put it on the ballot. So we're calling on every legislator running for the state general assembly, commit, promise to put term limits on the ballot. Let the people of Illinois vote up or down on term limits.
Yeah, and by the way, this in all likelihood, if it gets through, would be grandfathered. So this wouldn't even affect Madigan. So why would he block it? I mean, I know the answer to that, but why would he block it? I'm asking you.
He doesn't want any change. He likes the system that he can control. And the reality is it would put a 10-year limit on anybody in the General Assembly. 10 years is a long time, plenty of time. Now, the Speaker's been there since 1971, but 10 years is plenty of time. And it will put 8 years on statewide officers like myself and others, the Attorney General and others. And the right answer is to have term limits. Nobody should stay so long that they get locked in and entrenched with special
government was never designed to be that.
No, exactly right. George Washington stepped aside after 8 years when he founded our nation. We need everybody to step aside after a few years.
Governor, well-known differences between you and Speaker Madigan. It's in the video as well. You mentioned the Madigan machine. What will be different in this term?
Well, here's the issue. We've got an opportunity to cause a movement, to get people. This is really not about Democrats versus Republicans. This is about insiders, career politicians who've set up a corrupt system that benefits themselves and their cronies. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, we're all losing from this. We get high taxes. We lose job opportunities. We have corruption and cronyism. The system is broken. It's rigged. And what we're starting now is a movement, a transformation. transformation, a revolution, if you will. Democrats and Republicans, come together. Let's together get term limits done by insisting that the members of the General Assembly, if they're going to run for office and ask for your vote, demand that they commit to put term limits on the ballot.
Now, there has been a job growth hit in the state, which is tremendous when it comes to technology and things like that. And last week, and by the way, this is all on Facebook Live now, WGN Radio, and also through your Facebook Live page. But we've had a nice positive technology hit here. Is that going to key other industries to come here?
Yeah, it absolutely will. Every business, every industry needs technology and innovation and new ideas and software and programming and new products. And we in Illinois are so fortunate. The University of Illinois is one of the greatest research technology universities in the world. And their students, their alumni, their faculty have started dozens of the most successful companies, YouTube, PayPal, Yelp, iTunes, Tesla Motors, Oracle. It's stunning. What we can do by creating a network of integrating the U of I with the U of C and Northwestern and getting them here in Chicago and in other communities is keep their students here, starting companies here. And I've already talked to companies that say, boy, you do that, we're coming to Illinois because we want to be right near the U of I where their students are staying.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is, as depressing as it can be to look at the overall infighting that goes on all the time, the stuff that you're trying to fight against, it's encouraging to see these businesses being willing to invest. You got Google and Facebook on the other side of town.
That's right.
And folks spending a lot of money to come to Illinois and do business. So that's all upside. Speaking of money, Pritzker's got a lot of it. You have a lot of it. You know, I've asked you this before because, as you know, you and I don't agree on everything, but I've supported you, and I continue to support you, and I know you appreciate that.
But I do, very much.
But in conjunction with that, I often wonder why you want the headache. Because you got plenty of money, you got a nice life, you can go skiing every day, you can go do whatever you want, and yet you're coming back for more. Is it because the job's not done, or is there another reason?
Well, certainly the job's not done. We've made wonderful progress. We've made great achievements, but we got so much more to do. And why do I do it? Because this is home. This is home. You know, I love Illinois. I love Chicago. I was born here, lived here my whole life, raised six wonderful kids here, built businesses here. I have my dearest friends here. I love Illinois, and I won't let these insiders, these career corrupt politicians, destroy our home. That's what they're doing, and we've got to stop it. And I don't care who I run against. I don't care who's got what kind of money. That doesn't matter. This is about changing the system. This is about fighting back and getting a better future for our children and grandchildren, and I'm all in for it.
How much money are you going to spend of your own?
Who knows? Who knows? You know, that we'll get our message out for sure. We are running to do three primary things now. We've got to bring down our property tax burden. We have the highest property taxes in America, and it's crushing our families and our small businesses. We have got to roll back Madigan's forced higher income tax. We got to roll it back in a few years, and we can get that done by growing our economy faster than our government spending. And we've got to get term limits so we stop this system of insiders controlling our government.
Again, I don't know why those are outlandish.
I don't understand.
I don't understand why people go, wait a minute. What is crazy about any of that?
No, exactly. And why does Speaker Madigan block that? Why did he force his members in the General Assembly, who are loyal to him rather than to their constituents, to block those three things? It's because he controls the system. He makes money from it, and his cronies make money from it. And we, Democrats and Republicans, need to stand up and say, no more of that. It doesn't matter what party you're in. We want government that works for the people, and that's what we're going to fight to change.
My question for you, probably on the mind of every resident, we just got socked with one of the highest tax increases. I know you were completely against that, but just mentioned rolling back the Madigan tax act. How will we get, as taxpayers, how will we get tax relief?
Yeah, exactly right.
Everybody gets Amazon Prime.
Yes.
So the two things we got to do, get the property taxes down. How do we do it? Freeze property taxes for a couple years and give residents in every community the ability through a simple voter referendum, very easy, simple majority, just a few signatures needed. Every voter can decide whether to have their property tax levy go up or down in their community. And if we take the control away from Madigan and his fellow politicians, give the control to the residents, to the voters, we will get our property tax burden down.
That's my hula hoop theory. Stand in a hula hoop, look outside. Everything you can see is within your control. You take care of your local school board. You take care of your local town council.
Exactly.
And you have them control your life more than you know, and you then are responsible for them. Then everything can get better from there.
Exactly right. And then in terms of the income tax hike, like, here's the challenge for us. Under Madigan's control, with his caucus in the General Assembly, we have been shooting government spending through the roof over the last 35 years, and our economy has been relatively stagnant. Very slow growth, really almost no growth. I'm proud, since I became governor, we've added about 130,000 net new jobs, but we should have added five times that much. If we grow our economy faster than our government spending, we will have balanced budgets. Frankly, we'll have surpluses, like Indiana's running, like other states are running. We can have surpluses, and we'll roll back the income tax hike. That's the key.
The damage, in my opinion, that Trump's doing to the country is akin to the damage that Madigan's doing to the state. This is not a Republican or a Democrat thing, as you stated. This is an Illinois thing in this case, and this is an American thing otherwise. And I really feel like people are starting to stand up.
No, that's right. I feel it as I travel the state. Everywhere I go, and I love the work, working for the people of Illinois. I love going out and meeting people and talking with them and listening to their concerns and ideas. Everywhere I go, people come up to me and say, Governor, stay strong. Don't back down. Don't give up. You're on the right track. Stick to your guns. We're with you. And a lot of times they go and say, and I'm a Democrat. I don't normally support Republicans, but I like what you're doing. We know Madigan's a problem. You're trying to fix the system, and we're with you.
Your wife was very nice to come on the show regularly during the first campaign, but I had a sense you would never run for two. She's on board?
she's as feisty and competitive as anybody. She's a lifelong Democrat. She knows the system's broken, and she looks forward to coming back on your show. She'll be here.
Nice to see you. I know you got to run, and I appreciate you coming on to say hello and to start this new train again. Chris Kennedy's been on the show. I like him. He's a common sense guy. Pritzker's invited here anytime, so I certainly hope that he and Mr. Madigan can decide what his schedule will be, and he'll show up, as well as the other candidates as well. But your access is important, and for this audience, it's important for that they hear from you, so I know we'll continue that.
Well, it's an honor to work for the people of Illinois. I'm excited. We've got big changes coming. We're gonna achieve wonderful things and a better future for the people here.
All right, so is there a website for the new campaign yet?
Yeah, what's our website? We got a bunch. Yeah, okay. Still BruceRauner.com. We got a whole bunch of things, but that's the best one, BruceRauner.com. That was an easy one to remember.
Yeah, well, you had your helmet on yesterday. You can't be paying attention to that. Good luck with the rest of the day.
Thanks very much.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I have friends that say, oh, don't use social media. See, I don't go with tweets. Tweeting is like a typewriter. When I put it out, you put it immediately on your show. I mean, the other day I put something out. 2 seconds later, I'm watching your show. It's up.
Donald You're right. Trump is We're up. Watching your Twitter feed.
Okay. And you know, they're well-crafted. I was always a good student. I'm like a person that does well with that kind of thing. And I doubt I'd be here if it weren't for social media, to be honest with you, because there is a fake media out there. I get treated very unfairly by the media, and I have a tremendous platform.
So
when somebody says something about me, I'm able to go bing, 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 and I take care of it.
Tell you what, that bing, bing, bing will get you every time. Got to watch out for the bing, bing, bing. It's 7:44. Ryan Nobles from CNN will join us in a second. I gave you the impression Ditka was next. Ditka's actually next hour. The coach will be on next hour. But you can always pick up every piece of this show, even if you miss it, because you have to go into your stinking job and get your stinking pay. BTO 1974. You can get it in podcast. Wherever podcasts are available, you can find the Steve Cochran Show in complete, total packaging, or in bits and pieces as well. So we're glad you listen as well, whether it's now or whether it's on a on-demand basis. I mentioned that the widow of LaDavid Johnson is on Good Morning America this morning. ABC also has a sit-down with George Clooney and Matt Damon this morning on the Harvey Weinstein scandal. So Dean should have some notes on that after 8 o'clock as well. Let's go to our friend Ryan Nobles at CNN. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Great, Steve. How are you this morning?
We're doing fine. You know, there is some fatigue as we go into the 10th month of the era of Trump. But I don't guess that's going to go away anytime soon. So I think it's suck it up time, you know.
Fatigue might be a good way to describe it. We certainly haven't had a moment to catch our breath, and that continues even this morning.
I have nothing but respect for General Kelly, and I think pretty much everybody does. I don't know why they wouldn't. However, it does appear that he made factual errors in his pretty extraordinary press briefing the other day. Is he going to address those factual errors at any time? And if he doesn't, is it because there's a no-apology system in place at the White House?
You certainly don't get the sense that the White House is going to put him in a position where he could apologize for that. Every opportunity that they've had to answer the claim that he made about the congresswoman who's at the center of this back and forth between the president and the wife of one of these fallen soldiers, they seem to double down on it and look for no excuse in that respect. And even at one point, Sarah Sanders suggesting that we shouldn't ever question a four-star general.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, which is generals all over have come out against her on that.
Right. Yeah, and I think that what this signifies more than anything is just how awful the situation is on all different sides. The idea that this poor widow and the family of one of our bravest heroes is embroiled in this kind of he said, he said, she said, Twitter spat over who said what on a phone call. It's just awful to me. I get such an awful feeling in my stomach every time somebody brings it up and talks about it, because this isn't what we should be focusing on. But yet, with this administration, it's always about the perception that someone has of them or how they handle a situation. And the most important thing, which is the life of this soldier and the sacrifice that he made for our country, has become an afterthought. And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not endorsing the congresswoman's way of handling her end of this post incident as well, or criticizing her. But the fact is, the most basic duty of a commander in chief should be a display of empathy when a soldier falls. And he was incapable of doing it. Sure, we shouldn't be surprised by it, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't expect it. For God's sakes, fake it if you can't make it. And on Saturday, when the young man was laid to rest, the congresswoman was at the funeral, and instead of soothing or comforting words of any kind, real or fabricated by the president and the commander-in-chief, he was taking shots at the congresswoman online. That's not made up.
Yeah.
That's not fake. That's fact. That happened. And there's no reason to accept that as normal behavior.
And you know, if you think back, Steve, in previous administrations, you know, part of the reason that the president was able to kind of bob and weave and create a bit of a distraction with this topic is because previous administrations have not trumpeted how they've handled their interactions.
Because they shouldn't,
the families of fallen soldiers. Exactly. So the fact that he could even kind of get an angle in and accuse President Obama of doing something or not doing something is because President Obama didn't broadcast it every time they did it. And George W. Bush didn't broadcast it when he had his interactions with families. And he certainly had many, many interactions with families because of the situation the country was in at the time. So, again, I just go back to, look, you're right. I think that, you know, you have the situation where it started with the congresswoman's interaction, and then the president couldn't take the higher ground. He had to, and even up until this morning, now he's attacking the widow of this fallen soldier. It just makes you want to say, come on, let's move on and talk about something else. Let's just, you know, accept for whatever that this is a grieving family at an awful time of their lives. And you know what? However they want to respond to this tragedy is how they should do it. You know, there's a great story of George W. Bush, not told by him, but told by his aides about how he would go and visit the families of fallen soldiers, and the wives and mothers and family members would actually yell and scream at him, and he would just take it and just move on and say, you know what, I deserve that. That's not at all what this president is doing.
Yeah, and we'll just leave it at this. We would hope that there'll be no more tweets from the president in regards to the widow speaking this morning, and that Kelly will take the high road at some point soon and speak out, because he should and because he knows he should, because the position he is in is just outrageous. He never wanted to talk about it to begin with. He did, and now he's got a hole he's got to dig out of. Good God, it's ridiculous. The man lost his son as well. Ryan Nobles joins us from CNN. And Ryan, people can follow you on social media using the very creative handle Ryan Nobles.
That's right, with only one N, though, so it's a little creative.
Yes, it's very creative. All right, so it was, I think, 2002 when Congress gave up the ability to check the president before troops were committed to war. That was something that certainly appeared to be appropriate at the time. But I think privately, they've probably said to you what I've heard from many members, they don't want that responsibility now, which frankly is gutless, because you can't have it both ways. This weekend, we found out that we have 1,000 troops on the ground in Mali and the mess that is Northern Africa. How can Congress just look the other way and say this is the White House's problem?
It's a great question, and there's even been some members of Congress that have claimed that they didn't even know that there were that many troops in Africa. And you know, we have reporting this morning that the Pentagon clearly laid out on multiple occasions how many troops that they have in that region, and that they regularly inform Congress of the troop levels in different parts of the country. But you're right. There hasn't been this dying need by members of Congress to revisit the authorization of the use of military force, which is the vehicle by which the White House has the ability to send troops into harm's way without congressional approval. And there have been a smattering of members of Congress. Tim Kaine from Virginia, somebody that is strongly in favor of updating that particular piece of legislation, as is Rand Paul of Kentucky. But by and large, there isn't this groundswell of support by members of Congress to say, hey, we should have a voice in this. You know, the way that this government is set up is that Congress is the one that declares war, and then the president is the one that sends the troops into battle. That's not the way it's been set up basically since after 9/11. And you'd think that under the current circumstances, and I'm not necessarily talking about the administration, but I'm talking more about all the dangerous hotspots around the world, that Congress would want to have a more active role in this process. And I agree with you. It seems in many respects that they're just trying to punt that authority.
Ryan, I want to ask you about tax relief. The president saying yesterday that 2018 would be a political failure for the Republicans if they fail on tax overhaul. And then he added, we're on the verge of doing something historic. So I know he meets today with Senate Republicans, but can we see something historic next year, you think?
I mean, it's so impossible to predict what happens in Congress, because it seems as though the opinions of these members of Congress blow with the wind. And I think there's a lot of ways that you can compare tax reform to health care reform. And that if you ask a rank-and-file Republican if they want to repeal and replace Obamacare, they'd say yes. But then when you show them the specific piece of legislation that accomplishes that goal, they're like, well, I don't know if I want to do that. And I think tax reform is the same exact way. Perfect example this morning. One of the possible scenarios and nitty-gritty proposals that's out there would limit the amount that people could contribute to their 401ks tax-free. Well, that wouldn't necessarily be that popular. And the right away, the president came out this morning and said he wouldn't support a bill that would have that provision inside of it. And here's the thing that I don't think a lot of people are talking about. In general, the idea of limiting or changing the tax code sounds really good to most Americans. But the problem is it's going to require sacrifice in some way, shape, or form. Everyone benefits to a certain extent by the tax code. So if you're going to overhaul the tax code to the point where you could file your taxes on a piece of on a postcard, that means that some tax benefit that you get or that your neighbor gets or somebody down the street gets is going to have to go away. And every single one of those deductions has some sort of advocacy group or pet project that supports it and is going to fight it. So, having seen the way that this Congress has conducted itself up until this point in the 10 months of this administration, I still find it hard to believe that they're going to put something together. But at the end of all of this, I do think there's more will to get this done than there is health care. But the idea that it's going to be done before the end of the year, I still remain really skeptical.
We'll let you go on this. Biggest problem that the Republican Congress has in getting anything passed is continuing to have roadblocks put in the way by the president, who also claims to be Republican. Happened again, as far as I'm concerned, and kind of piggybacking the conversation that Andrea was just having with you, in that the president says your 401k won't be affected. As you just said, something's got to give. If you're going to make these kind of changes, something's got to give. So now that's another piece they'd have to backtrack on if they go with the plan as fleshed out so far.
Right. And you know what's going to end up happening, Steve? And this is exactly what happened with health care, is that, you know, what politicians want to be able to do is offer you your cake and then give you the opportunity to eat it. And the problem here is that they're going to end up coming up with some huge tax reduction plan that isn't paid for and is going to balloon the deficit, because that's the way that you reform the tax code and do massive cuts, but then not have anyone pay the price for it. So instead, my kids and my grandkids are going to pay for that instead of us doing it in this period of time. And I think what Paul Ryan's trying to say is just give me some time here. And if you just trust me, that I'm going to come up with a tax plan that at the end of the day you're going to pay less for. Yes, you may not be able to check a box that says you get a deduction for this specific thing, but trust me, the end product is going to be easier to deal with and is going to cost you less. Whether or not he can get from that point and make that convincing argument without all the political potholes that are going to end up along the way, I still find hard to believe, given the environment that we have in Washington right now.
Saw a rerun of the old Tonight Show with Carson this weekend, where part of the desk piece after the monologue, he was shocked that we had reached a deficit of $3 trillion. I think it was around 1988, 89.
Those were the days.
We are at 20 to 22, maybe 23 right now. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know what? And the joke is that, you know, these Republicans that have screamed about the deficit for the last 8 years are all of a sudden going to start making arguments about deficit as it relates to GDP. And it's not as bad as it looks. Trust us, we're okay.
Good God. I'd just like to apologize to my granddaughter. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it as always. That's Ryan Nobles. We'll talk to you soon.
Great. Have a great week, guys. Thanks.
That's Ryan Nobles. He's good, isn't he?
He's the best.
And when he finds out he's on this show. Dean Richards coming up. Hopefully he'll have some details of what Matt Damon and George Clooney said about the Weinstein mess, amongst the other show business news. But before that, the news. That's next.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. I hope you had a delightful weekend. Did you have a delightful weekend?
Steve, my weekend was so delightful I could puke.
Oh, right.
It was that delightful.
You can imagine it's a traffic apocalypse. It's a trafficopolis out there, and we need to get an update on that. But let me tell you what's on the list for Dean. The new SNL exhibit, a Magnum PI reboot, the Gaga's in the news, the Timberlake's in the news. A new Hollywood sex scandal that doesn't have the words Harvey or Weinstein in it, unless you're associating him with it, with a guy that you wouldn't know, but I've met him. I'm sure Dean's met him. Creepy. And George Clooney and Matt Damon speaking out this morning. All coming up.
That's what I did over the weekend. I talked with Clooney, Damon, and Julian. Are you okay? You sound like you're leaking.
I was about to say first, but coming up.
We need to get a patch on him.
Coming up.
Definitely leaking air.
Gee, though, after a weekend like that, though, Dean, Clooney, Damon.
Yeah, it's just another
back
weekend.
Back to the grind.
Dean.
Back to the grind. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you how great it was to hear the alarm clock again this morning after 2 weeks.
Fun.
Oh, that was
fun,
great.
Fun.
That was great.
8:19, Jen DeSalvo's in for Mary, doing a great job this morning. What's happening?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Back to Dean, just back from L.A. Oh, by the way, I want to congratulate my niece, Nina, appearing in the Addams Family theater production. She plays Grandma Addams, and she killed it at the Windy City performing.
Playhouse.
I'm sorry?
Windy City Playhouse?
Yeah, I believe it's called the Windy City Playhouse. It's on Milwaukee Ave?
Well, the one that I'm thinking of is on Irving Park Road.
No, this was Milwaukee Ave. It's a junior theater situation.
Very nice. We have a lot of great theater companies like that.
Yeah, Nina was the grandmother, and she came out and stole three, four scenes she was in. And
you were at the, you were supportive being there in the audience for her.
And I was whooping it up.
Did you bring her flowers?
Is that a tradition?
Mm-hmm.
No, her mom was there.
Opening night, right?
Yeah. I brought her mom flowers.
Did you eat stuff off of the food tray backstage afterwards?
Well, I belong in green rooms, as you
steal
know.
Steal water? Anything?
Yeah, absolutely. Just walk back and get it. Yeah. But they're great. And then we went to the, I don't know if you ever heard of this brand new place in Chicago, the Gale Street Inn.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not familiar with it.
Oh, saw the great ribs. George Karkazis there.
He's one of
Karsis.
Us.
George Karkazis, I believe. I'm just taking a wild guess here.
I just wanted
I'm recently back from Greece. So
I just wanted to add about 14 extra syllables.
You did.
Yeah, we don't all end in S. Well, most of us do, yeah. Unless there's a U in there.
But George is great. And the Gale Street Inn folks are great.
Delicious ribs.
Anyway, nice job, Nina. Well done by you.
Yeah.
Let's get to the other show business stuff, including you talking to Clooney and Matt Damon.
Yeah. Matt Damon and Julianne Moore star in a new movie that's called Suburbicon that opens on Friday. But George Clooney directs the movie. So here you've got three Academy Award winners here. Clooney, Julianne Moore, and Matt Damon. Talked about the movie. Talked about a lot of different things. But, of course, the number one subject everywhere in Hollywood right now is the Harvey Weinstein sexual abuse scandal. And yesterday, new allegations came out for another fairly well-known director. His name is James Toback. He also is an Oscar winner. He's a writer. He's a director of movies like The Private Life of a Modern Woman and ironically Seduced and Abandoned, Bugsy. He won an Oscar for writing Bugsy. But anyway, 38 women have come forward with the same kind of alleged predatory behavior that we saw in Harvey Weinstein. Both of these men are denying the allegations, but this, you know, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And
I've met Toback, and he's got nothing but a creepy vibe.
They're totally, when you see a picture of this guy.
Have you been in a room with him?
I did interview him years ago with a Mark Wahlberg movie. I forget what the name of it was, but
and had no indication that he was involved in any of this in his own secret little world. But this is one of those guys you meet in Hollywood and you just go, I don't ever need to see him again.
Yeah, you shake. I mean, I always compare it to that scene in It's a Wonderful Life when Jimmy Stewart shakes hands with Mr. Potter.
Right.
And then he looks at his hand like he touched something icky and,
exactly.
and oily. And I hate to profile anybody, you know, just based on that, but that's
well, it's just one of those things when you hear the story, you go, well, that's not a surprise, really.
That's how I felt. And apparently there have been you know, rumors about this guy forever in Hollywood, like Harvey Weinstein. And nobody said anything.
Well,
and
Clooney was friends with Harvey on some level.
Yeah, you know, they worked together in several projects. Same with Damon.
Yeah, and Damon and Ben Affleck got their start in a Harvey Weinstein movie that they ended up winning an Oscar for. So what are they saying
this
morning?
So I talked, you know, I sat down with all of them, and, you know, they've all made comments and how horrific this is and so forth. So I was just curious what they think should happen next. You know, how do we solve this problem? Clooney, Julianne Moore, and Matt Damon. Where do we go from here? How do we address this, and what do we do?
I think that's the point. First of all, we have to address the idea that this isn't a Hollywood problem, that this is a systemic problem. I mean, we just saw what happened at Fox News this morning. We see that, you know, they paid off somebody $32 million and then renewed Bill O'Reilly's contract. This is going on all around in all different industries. But what we have to do is there has to be something good that comes out of all of this. And first, we have to acknowledge it. Everyone has to acknowledge the problem. And then we have to say, okay, if this is going to not just become a joke and people look forward 3 months from now and it's just a punchline somewhere, women have to feel safe to come forward. They have to be believed. This has to become impossible to happen right. anymore. And my wife is a very successful human rights lawyer. And she tells me that, you know, this happens in law firms and happened to her in law firms where people tried to take advantage of her.
I think we correct it by having repercussions for this kind of behavior. When there are actual repercussions, legal and business and financial, people will stop doing these things.
What's happened in the wake of this and, you know, as Julie said, accountability and having there be repercussions for this, I think that's a real shot across the bow of anybody who's engaging in behavior like this.
If Clooney and Damon also showed up on Good Morning America this morning, did they update those comments any further, in particular Matt Damon?
They talked a little more about their relationship with Harvey Weinstein. But they've both made statements over the past week.
Nothing really new.
Both made statements, so really there was nothing new there, and that's
well done by you.
I didn't want
well
to
done,
rehash
listen,
it.
Well done by you. Well done by you, because so, that's not an easy thing to bring up.
Not only talking about the heavy news, Steve, but also with Clooney. You know, he's the father of 4-month-old twins now. Pretty different from Mr. Sexiest Man in the World. Pretty new lifestyle for him. And he also talked about that new job in his life. Truth be told, I mean, do you keep this busy acting, directing, your activism, just to avoid child care?
I am now.
Now, yeah.
Yeah. Now that I'll tell you when I decided that. 2 days ago, I decided I really had to get – I literally called up my agent and said, find me anything. Because we started our kids on solid food.
Oh.
And everything in that diaper has changed. Everything. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
In the last 2 days, yeah. I've been like, I've been changing diapers. I don't care. And then you open this thing up and you go, how did that start out as a carrot?
Yeah, it's Armageddon in there.
It's a hazmat suit.
It's hazmat. So you're pretty involved then with
child care. Well, I have children, you know. I have to, you know.
Well, that's, you know, not all
parents. Basically I do is I, most of the time I get my agent to do it, to change the diapers.
Yeah, That's Clooney.
That's tremendous. Clooney. Awesome. That is tremendous.
He gets his agent to do that.
Gaga dancing with the Bush son and father at the former president's event, which is kind of cool and kind of reminded you what America is all about.
It was very cool. Very cool. Gaga surprise appearance at this benefit that took place at Texas A&M University. She sang three songs solo on acoustic piano. I don't think Gaga's ever better than when she's on acoustic piano by herself.
I agree.
It gives you goosebumps when you hear it. But even more goosebumpy than that was a picture that she took with Barack Obama, 93-year-old Jimmy Carter, 93-year-old George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, absent from the event, the current president. Gaga tweeted, isn't it great that we can put our differences aside and, you know, get together to help people? She also donated $1 million of her own money to hurricane relief for all of the areas that have been affected by the hurricane disasters.
And just so you remember, for anybody that might want to be skeptical about that and go, well, she's got it, doesn't mean she has to give it away. And not everybody donated $1 million this weekend.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty nice of her.
New SNL exhibit opened this weekend. Big party Friday night hosted by our own Larry Wharton Company.
At the Museum of Broadcast Communication. It's called SNL, The Experience. A really cool exhibit. Walk-through exhibit that kind of takes you through the making of the Saturday Night Live show each week, but the really coolest parts are the memorabilia, the artifacts, the costumes, things that you will recognize instantly from the early days of SNL to now. The exhibit is officially open now and will be there till December of 2018.
And lastly, Justin Timberlake is going to do the halftime show at the Super Bowl. And I understand he's going to expose his right breast.
Yeah, the left one.
Well, it's the lefty. He's going lefty.
It's going to be the left one this time. Well, I guess he hasn't exposed anything. He was the one that exposed Janet Jackson's breast back in 2004.
Right.
Who hasn't, really?
But a total accident.
Yeah, complete accident that piece of wardrobe just happened to fall off in his hand at that moment. This has been rumored for like a month now, but he made it official yesterday. February 4th, I think, is the Super Bowl this year in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. And it's in Minneapolis?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Oh, I miss that. I was actually at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis in the, 91, 92? It's one of the runs of the Buffalo Bills. That year they got thrashed by the Washington Redskins. All right, and Dean, you're back on TV now. We'll be on TV on CLTV coming up at 9, and keep up the fine work. Well, I'm not sure what you do for a living, but whatever you do, keep it up.
I'm going to do just try to keep it above board today. I don't even know what that means.
I don't.
I have no idea what that means.
Why does everything sound wrong?
Sometimes, why can't I just be quiet?
I don't know. 8:34, big story in a moment. What are we doing now?
Oh, we're doing Governor Rauner's big announcement this morning
on
in
this
studio.
Show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, next on 720 WGN.
Ditka.
Well, it's coming right now, right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
the me. Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
On the heels of two Bears wins in a row, which frankly hadn't happened much lately, so that's all good. 8:46, the coach joins us now, and I saw Coach, I guess it was Friday, in a recording session here. He was talking about how old you feel. I thought you looked great.
You know, I try to do what I can do. I mean, there's no guarantees, you know. I work out. I do the things I have to do. But, you know, you get old. It's called old age. It happens to everybody. You're lucky if it happens to you, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose that's the right way to look at it. All right, so yesterday we saw Bears defense, classic Bears defense, a couple of great takeaways, record-setting 75-yard steals and returns. I mean, that all felt good, didn't it?
Well, I tell you what, I said it, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, when what they do well, they can run the football, and they play great defense. And those two things will take you a long way. The other thing they do well, they play good special teams. So when you got those things going for you, you got a chance against anybody. They didn't have their best offensive day. There's no question about that. But that's a good, good, solid football team that John has.
How impressed are you, Mike, by this rookie Eddie Jackson? And not just scoring the touchdowns yesterday, but the way he stepped right in and been a major contributor on this team.
Well, you know, it's really unbelievable. But then, you know, when you get an opportunity, the whole key to success in life is to take advantage of that opportunity. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's taking advantage of the opportunity that he has. And, you know, his confidence level has to be tremendous, and especially after the way he played yesterday.
You know, Trubisky getting 7 pass attempts in a game is, again, part of the building process, I think. But I brought this up to Hampton a while ago. Can you win in the NFL if you're throwing not a lot of passes? Isn't this still the passing league?
Well, it is. There's no question about that. It is a passing league. Anybody would tell you that. But I think the defense can take you a long way. Right now, they've got a good defense. And I think the running game is very, very good. So, you know, hey, what you do best, do it. Don't worry about what people think. Don't worry about your stats. Do what you do best and do it and continue to do it. And that's what they're going to do.
I know it's a different – I mean, it's the league has changed. It's a passing league now, as Steve said. But there is precedent for winning games this way. And I mean, you had some teams that were primarily running teams playing great defense. And it's a formula for success. Having said that, at what point do you look for more passing to come into this offense, giving Trubisky more of a chance to show what he can do?
Well, let me say this first of all. Objective when you play a football game is for you to win, mm-hmm. to score more points than the other guys score. I don't think right now they're worried about that. Mitch Trubisky is going to be a fine quarterback. He's going to have a long career in the NFL. I don't think you worry about that right now. You worry about doing what you do best and keep doing it.
You know, Dave Enick called a great Northwestern win on Saturday, and Northwestern's got a program that's on the rise, probably a few steps ahead of the Bears. But I'm as optimistic about football in this town as I've been in a while.
Well, Northwestern has a great coach. I mean, there's no question. So do the Bears. I mean, John's a good coach. The guy, Northwestern's, you know, and you know, to compete in the Big Ten with the schools that they have to compete with, the Michigans, the Michigan States, you know, they're doing a great, great job. And I think a lot of it is they're starting to recruit better. You're getting better young players in there, not only smart players, but better athletes.
All right, so I mentioned this story, Mike, a couple of minutes ago. Sean Payton offered his guys, because they wore long cleats yesterday at Lambeau, and players don't really like wearing them, apparently. And so he said he's got free pedicures for his players today in New Orleans. What was the best perk that you ever promised your players after a win?
Well, I never promised them anything. I made them promise me something. No. I mean, no, I don't remember, really. We probably had a couple things that we did in the past. But, you know, again, I mean, the bottom line is, do you win the football game? I mean, I hear this, well, we didn't do this, but we won. That's all that counts right now. The other things will come. Mitch will come. The passing game will come. I really believe that. But you do what you can do now, and you build on it.
Drew Brees overcame a couple of interceptions yesterday, and then in the second half at Lambeau, New Orleans took over that game. What do the Bears have to do to win on Sunday in New Orleans?
Well, I think they got to put pressure on Brees. That's the one thing you have to do. You can't give him all day back there. He's one of the best in the business at throwing the football. He's got good weapons on offense, on the running game and the receiving game. You got to put pressure on him. You got to disturb his rhythm. You got to get him out of what he wants to do and make him do things he doesn't want to do. And then, you know, hey, you got a chance. I think the Bears have a good chance against New Orleans. Believe me, I think they'll win the game.
And in doing that, they would climb all the way back from a hole that nobody thought they'd get out of 3 weeks ago, in a division that's gettable, in a league where 9-7 may get you deeply entrenched into the playoffs. I think Bears fans ought to be looking up. This team's trending in the right direction.
I agree with you. I don't know. You say 9-7, 8-8 might get you there. I mean, Green Bay's got a lot of problems. And when you lose the best quarterback in football, you've got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about Minnesota, but Detroit really has major problems. So when you look at that division, I think the Bears are as good as anybody in that division.
Yeah, and they get the bye week, too, after Sunday. So probably good timing for them, because then they get back. They got Minnesota coming up again, Green Bay coming up again. So a lot can happen here.
Don Majkowski might be quarterbacking again, but the Packers are a mess.
I hope not.
Coach, great talking to you. Good seeing you the other day. Thanks for the update.
God bless you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
There you go. That's Coach Mike Ditka. What was the line in the beginning? You said, you're getting old, at least you're, but that's a good thing. Was that it? You said, you're lucky to get old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're lucky.
Would you guys take advantage of the pedicures? I'm just curious.
Why would today be any different? Well, I usually do Dave's toes. He picks out a color. He does mine. Yeah. Sorry,
he likes
you
the multicolor.
Just got
toes.
A little weird.
Yeah. Just got a little awkward. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like when Dave goes rainbow on my toes.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
like
chiclets. That's what he calls my toes. Chiclets.
Apparently.
Do you think Jen DeSalvo will ever do the show again?
No.
I wouldn't
She's
blame
done.
Her.
Sorry,
yes.
Jen.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
913, rain falling downtown Chicago, wherever you're listening, around the country, around the city, around the area. We appreciate it. I hold in my hand the book Run, Hide, Repeat. This isn't Wash, Rinse, Repeat. This is Run, Hide, Repeat. The author is Pauline Dakin. We'll talk to her in a second. Well, you know, we always talk about, as a parent, what do kids need? They need to know they're loved.
And protection.
They also need protection. They also need stability. And they need to not worry about grown-up things. Well, Pauline's childhood had none of that. No stability. Always worrying about grown-up things because she was literally on the run. A fugitive childhood. Good morning, Pauline.
Good morning, Steve.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah, it's truth is sometimes stranger than fiction, right?
So your mom's a flight attendant. What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a developer and a business guy. You know, he had irons in a few different fires. My mother stopped working when she got married and had my brother and I.
So the story that you knew as a child as to why you would suddenly pull up stakes and go on the run and live secretively, when you were old enough to understand that's not normal, what were you told?
Well, we really weren't told anything. You know, my brother and I would say, you know, what's wrong with our crazy family? We go on vacation and never go home or you know, are otherwise leaving everybody we know without saying goodbye. What's wrong with us? And the answer would be, well, I can't tell you now, but when you're older, I will tell you.
And when did older come? Because to me, my understanding is it wasn't until you became a journalist at CBC in Canada that you did your own homework to figure it out.
Yeah, some of the answers came later, but it was when I was in my early 20s and working as a young reporter that my mom called me and said, okay, you always wanted to know, so meet me at this motel on the weekend and I'll tell you everything. And when I got there, she and a fellow named Stan, who was a longtime family friend, who were there, and together they told me that we'd been on the run from the mafia. And it was a very sort of complex story about how we came to be targeted, but a part of that was that my father, who she'd been divorced from since we were small, had been involved in the mob.
The story initially had to be some sort of relief that, at least now I have some vision into this, but and I don't want to give the book away, but it turns out that's not the end of the story, is it?
No, and you know, I'm not worried about spoilers because I think there's enough going on in this book that people will still find it interesting if I say that, no, there was much more going on. I mean, the story was crazy in the sense that, you know, we were on the run. There was this secret anti-organized crime task force that was providing us with protection. They also ran covert prison systems for people arrested for mob activity. You know, it was just this crazy thing. And it was when I was in my late 20s that I finally thought, I can't, you know, believe this stuff or live with this stuff anymore. So I did a bit of a test, a thing, I guess, where I said to Mom and Stan on the phone, I've just gotten home. My house has been broken into. What should I do? And a few minutes later, I got a phone call back saying, Stan says, yes, the guys, this covert task force group, the people who were protecting you picked up two people who'd broken into your house and they'd been following you and they had pictures of you and so on. And so I immediately knew it wasn't true because
there was no break-in.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really when, you know, the questions about why turned now to why would anybody play this terrible hoax on our family.
Well, was it a hoax? Did your mother believe all of this was true, or was there a backstory there?
My mother certainly believed all of it was true, and there were reasons why I could understand why she might be suspicious about certain things with my dad. But it did. It was Stan that my brother and I decided it was Stan who was kind of making up these stories and feeding them to my mother, and she trusted him. She'd become to know him because he was a counselor with Al-Anon, and so when she was leaving my dad. And he was alcoholic, she went to Al-Anon and they recommended him to her as a counselor. And then she eventually had gone to work at his church. He was also a minister. So she'd gone to work at his church as a secretary. And so she trusted him, right?
So this wild story from Stan, and I want people to remember, again, this is the 60s, when women were more deferential to men in some of the worst possible ways, including details and protection and things of that nature. But Stan...
And deferential to clergy, too, right?
Oh, of course, right. Why would someone in the clergy... Who could I trust more than my Al-Anon guy who also happens to be a preacher? I mean, you know, it's the perfect setup.
Yeah, and he was also a good guy. He was a kind person.
So it was all about control, right? I mean, whatever insecurity Stan had, it sounds like it was all about control and his own mental illness.
Yeah, well, it did. It was when I began working on this book and doing some research that I stumbled on what I believe is the answer for why he would have done this. And there was a paper I came across in a medical journal written by a psychiatrist at Harvard University. And I read this and I just thought, holy smoke, that's it. And I called this guy and he confirmed that this sounded like what it was. And it's what's described as a very rare condition called delusional disorder. And people can make up the craziest stories and their belief in them is very fixed. So, you know, Stan believed all of the things he was telling us. So he was obviously living in great fear himself.
Is there any chance the President of the United States has this condition?
Oh, it's very interesting because two eminent psychiatrists in your country have just written a book where they're talking about the mental health of your president. And I was really surprised to see that delusional disorder is one of the illnesses they suggest may be responsible for some of his behavior. And that's unusual because this is said to be so rare that most psychiatrists will never see it in their practice because these people don't think they're sick and they don't go looking for help. And they appear completely normal.
And it goes back to, in Trump's case, to as a boy, his father shows up at a Little League or a Pony League or a Babe Ruth League baseball game, and he's just hit a double, and he tells his father he hit a home run. The lies about the little things and the dumb things that come out instantly and are instantly believed by the person that said them, that seems to be core to this condition.
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm not a psychiatric expert, but the arguments around that are quite interesting. And the features of the illness are fascinating, how people can have very responsible positions and they can be respected in the community and nobody will have a sense that there's anything wrong unless they somehow get included in the delusion, as my family did.
One of the reasons that I found your book so interesting is I had a neighbor who I believe absolutely had this condition, and eventually, his family was blown up over this. And he lost a very impressive career and a lot of money and all that. But it's a very real mental health condition, and it's tough to be sympathetic or empathetic for somebody that does this kind of damage, even though they may not know what kind of damage they're doing at the time. And one of the most amazing things, Pauline, about your story, as far as I'm concerned, and again, the book's called Run, Hide, Repeat. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. But the interesting thing to me is that you became this well-spoken, seemingly well-grounded, educated adult. I can't imagine you were ever able to stay in one school for any period of time.
No, that's true. And I really was interested in what you were saying at the beginning of the interview about what children need to grow up and be okay. And it is, you know, the thinking is that they need stability and they need predictability and routines and so on, which obviously, I mean, we had Sunday dinner every night in my household. So on a micro level, we had some of that, but on a macro level, not at all. But I think one of the themes of my book is that there's a great irony that the person, my mother, who was responsible for exposing us to the chaos that we grew up in, was also the person who never gave my brother or myself any reason to ever doubt that we were loved and that we were supported. She was there for us in every way. And so that created, I believe, some resilience to deal with the madness that was all around us.
In reading Pauline, it obviously it changed the way you started looking at life, but how did you overcome initially that fear and that looking over your shoulder?
I think some of it was just time going by. You know, once I had determined that this was definitely not true, I had to, you know, have a little talks with myself. I'd be, you know, on the street and think, oh, somebody's following me. And then I think, wait, now, no, it's not real. This isn't real. So there was a lot of talking to myself. And eventually I stopped feeling like I was on alert all the time, and started to feel, like a more normal person, I guess.
I'll let you go on this, but one of the great dangers that kids have who grow up in tumultuous situations, not that anybody has a story quite like Pauline Dakins, but is an addiction to chaos. And codependents of alcoholics have this as well, where it's very tough to live a normal life, and sometimes you self-sabotage. Have you been able to manage your own personal life pretty well?
You know, it's very interesting. Writing this book has really allowed me to observe, you know, to put all of this in an adult perspective and to really think deeply about what happened and what are the ways I've reacted. And so I can look at and say that for a long time, I think I kept people at a certain distance, that I did not allow my relationships to go beyond a certain point. And the other thing is, yeah, that chaos, that addiction to, so I think I've channeled that into my work and being busy. And, right. You know, my friends would say, God, you know, relax already. But I think that that was part of the way that I coped with all of this, partly to distract myself, but also partly maybe there was some sort of addiction to the buzz.
Well, that's much healthier than five marriages or booze or drugs or anything else that's out there. It's an amazing story. Boy, it sure feels like a movie to me. I don't know if people are talking to you about it yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if they do.
Yeah. There definitely are some offers on the table.
Well, good luck with it, because it's a story that I think people are really going to find fascinating. Pauline Dakin from the CBC, Run, Hide, Repeat, a memoir of a fugitive childhood. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for your interest.
There you go. Let me hold this up again so people can see it on CLTV. Pauline Dakin's book. And the story of a kid on the run, a kid and her brother.
Interesting, too, because you have to change. Well, she had to change her whole way of thinking. Because when you're told something as a child, you believe it.
Well, and at some point, it's not fun anymore. It's kind of exciting. It's adventurous. And then you get to a certain age, you go, well, I don't have any friends because we're never in one town where I can stay in school.
Right.
I don't know anybody. We're always, I mean, it's great that her mom loved her and and protected her. But imagine the torture the mother went through because she apparently bought all the stuff this guy was feeding her.
Right.
Crazy.
And the kids did then, too. They had no choice.
9:25, my friend Tim Cavanaugh coming up. He's funny, and he has a guitar. We're back with a big story, too, on the way on 720 WGN.
If you have the time.
I do have the time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You're doing the halftime show at the Super Bowl? You do have time!
I'm doing the halftime show!
Hey! Nothing I can see but you when you dance.
Such a great song. Justin Timberlake being a goofball, announcing he will do the Super Bowl halftime show. I love Timberlake. I think he's one of the most talented guys in show business, period.
I
so
agree.
Talented.
Yeah, for sure.
He can sing, he can dance, he can act. He reminds me a lot of Dave.
I thought you'd say of you.
No, and Dave gets. Dave gets a couple of cocktails in him. You wouldn't believe the stuff he can pull off.
Go Cats.
Who knew he could sing? We just found out he could sing over the summer.
We need a break before we get to the big story. Let's do that now on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We were up in Appleton yesterday, and we went up to the mall, and I feel bad. I made a woman cry out at the mall. Well, she came up to me with a clipboard. She said, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions? I said, no, that's fine. She said, on average, how much money do you make every year? I thought about it with the best straight face I could manage. I said, $250,000. She says, what do you do for a living? I said, I take surveys over at the other mall. And,
she didn't think it was funny, but I agree with you guys. It really kind of was.
I have a nephew just applied for a job out at the mall. He said the job applications have gotten very complicated. This one had a lot of fill-in-the-blank questions, a lot of true-false questions. One question read, when I'm at work, my mind is generally blank. He put true.
.44 Friday night, Mike Toomey, John DeCoste, me. One show at the Pheasant Run, Zanies. And then Saturday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Here's why we're doing a 4 o'clock show in Rosemont with the great Tim Cavanaugh. You just heard the timcav.com. It's because Tim is really difficult to work with and a real diva. And he's dressing up like Casper the Friendly Comedian later. And he's got a couple of parties to go to. Isn't that correct, Tim?
Actually, I've got 6 o'clock mass that I always go to. I'm still an altar boy. I'm an altar man.
Altar man
is technically what I am, but that works out fine for me. So I really appreciate the fact that you're doing a show at 4 o'clock to accommodate my schedule. And Zanies is known as a nightclub, but I'm just so happy that they're flexible enough to be an afternoon club. At least on Saturday.
An early dinner club. And you can come to the 4 o'clock show on Saturday, zanies.com. You'll see the great Tim Cavanaugh, DeCoste and me. And there's plenty of places to have dinner afterwards. And then you can go home and do the trick-or-treating thing if you like.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say, here's the thing. People come to Tim's house for Halloween, and this is a special bonus. You don't get candy. You get a song. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, you do. Well, that's the nice thing, and I guess that's why we haven't had a trick or treater in like the last 9 years at my house, because you know what they love the candy. Now speaking of Halloween, okay, this is kind of a stretch, but I checked out the new Apple store, which is right near your studio,
and it is
beautiful, and the beautiful thing is it's right on the river. Which makes it the perfect location for the big Halloween event they're throwing this Friday, bobbing for apples.
if you're
a good swimmer, you could grab yourself a nice Mac Pro Book. So that's something to look forward to.
Right. I think Apple's doing that as a promotion, aren't they? Aren't they throwing computers in the river and then you bob your head in to try to get one?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you have to actually do full body immersion to get it. If you have really strong teeth, maybe you can just bob. And that's not all that they're doing. From now until Halloween, you'll get a razor blade with every apple you buy.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. You get the computer and the razors. Blades.
And the razor blade.
I thought we didn't have to worry about that anymore.
Mm.
Remember those days?
How many times as a kid did we get a computer with a razor blade in it? It was all the time.
It was a lot, but we didn't know what they were back in those days, and we didn't appreciate it.
No, and our father
took just threw them in the garbage.
And our father took the razor blades. The number for tickets, if you don't want to go the Zanies.com route, is 847-813-0484 for Rosemont, 847-813-0484. You ever done a show at 4 o'clock?
Yes, I've done shows at every time of the day imaginable. Well, actually, not. I won't say I haven't done one at 4 in the morning. I've done one starting at 2 in the morning, and I've done stuff at 8 in the morning, 8, 9, 10.
You know, it's funny you say that.
Pretty much any time during the day.
I did a breakfast show. I did a corporate gig several years ago now, but it was a breakfast show. And boy, I'll tell you, that's a rough room. 9 o'clock in the morning. Some people haven't had coffee. That's a rough room.
Yeah. I have been there. Another rough room is when you're doing the noon shows at the community college in the cafeteria. And the thing is, the kids don't know that you're going to be there. And boy, are they excited to see you show up at the 1 hour a day that they can actually talk to their friends. So it's miserable.
You know what I was thinking about the other day? I went to the Potbellies. You know the Potbellies? You familiar with the Potbellies?
I love the Potbelly, yeah.
So there's a guy at the Potbellies. God bless him. He's just singing his heart out, and he's got a hat. Throw some money in a hat. Would it kill you to throw some money in a hat? And I noticed nobody's really paying attention. You know, and he's dropping a little Carly Simon, You're So Vain in there, and he's doing his versions of stuff, and the arrangements are nice, and the songs are nice. I thought, how much fun would it be just to slide Tim Kavanaugh into that spot and have Tim do some of his songs?
I would love that.
Yeah, just see how long it takes people to notice what you're singing.
You know what, Steve? With my career, I'm almost there. I am almost, I'm pretty much almost there.
That's ridiculous. I mean, you're working at 4 o'clock show, Saturday. Things are going great for you.
4 o'clock Saturday is I'm so excited about it, and it'll be great to work with you. And by the way, I want to be the last to congratulate you on your 1 millionth show.
Yes, congratulations. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw the 1 millionth coming. Now, by the way, are you working on anything musically for Saturday yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm working on a couple of Halloween things, a couple of special things.
It'd be great if you had your guitar nearby and you could sing for us.
You know what? It would be great, but you know what? I just have these stupid jokes that I prepared for today. We should have talked about this ahead of time, Steve.
I must have come to the wrong rehearsal.
You know what? Okay, so here are the jokes, though. Wait till you hear these. You're going to be saying, we don't need Tim Kavanaugh with a guitar. He should just burn the guitar.
You and the guitar,
Steve,
are fantastic.
Halloween is such a big thing these days.
It is a big thing, Tim.
This week at McDonald's, they're introducing a new menu item, the corn on the macabre.
Oh, look what happened there. That's one that Andre would love.
I know. I didn't say a word, but I do like it, though, Tim.
It is delicious, I'll tell you what. And the nematodes have not affected the corn there at all. For those of you who are actually paying attention to the commercials.
I'm going as a nematode.
Which I did because I was on hold for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we had you on hold since around 7 this morning. I don't feel like we've clicked through all of the jokes. You got anything else for Halloween?
Oh, boy, do I. You know, Steve, when I was a kid, my mom always tried to make Halloween interesting.
Really?
When we were growing up. She used to buy two kinds of candy to give out to the trick-or-treaters. She used to buy Smarties and Dum Dums, and then she'd ask the kids trivia questions. You know, which she thought was kind of funny until their house burned down. And that's right. When we all learned, oh, dumb kids know a lot more about arson than they'd give them credit for.
See, I didn't know. Did you have a scary house in your neighborhood as a kid? Because we had a house in our neighborhood that we were told, don't go to that house, skip that house.
And was it Bobby Portis's house?
Yes, it was. And we were afraid he was going to break our jaw. That's exactly right.
But by the way, at the next Bulls game, they're giving out Nikola Mirotic bobbleheads. But they don't actually, the heads don't bobble until Bobby punches it. But
it's a match set. You know the what? Bobby those thing has real action in the arms.
It's like a Rock'em Sock'em
robot.
Yeah,
like Rock'em Sock'em robots. Yeah.
Well, speaking of those haunted houses, Steve, it's almost like we set this one up, which we didn't quite clearly from the way the rest of the interview is gone. But we have a haunted house in our neighborhood.
What? Really?
And it is the scariest one I've ever been to. It's called Dr. Doom's Horrible House of Faulty Wiring.
You're familiar? Ooh,
behind these walls lurk hundreds of blood-curdling building code violations. And it is scary. I almost wet myself.
Yeah, and Andrea, you covered that, I think, for Channel 9 this weekend.
I did, yeah. It was zombies. It was terrible, Tim. I don't know if I can go back there.
I know. It was
too realistic.
And the thing is, don't wet yourself because, you know.
Not near that kind of wiring.
There's a sign, too, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
Here's the other thing that we've decided to do as a special, since I don't know if you told you, it's a Saturday 4 o'clock in the afternoon show. You can do whatever you want Saturday evening. But we've also decided, John DeCoste and I, and Tim doesn't even know this, but John DeCoste and I have decided to also bring musical instruments.
Oh, what do you guys play? I didn't know y'all like a band.
I'm bringing a bassoon.
Great.
And John is bringing a pan flute. And he's going.
Oh, I have heard John on the pan flute. Mm-hmm. That is excellent. And, you know, he can also, like, cook up bacon with it. And
right. It's multi-purpose. And John's lost some weight recently, so he's very light on his toes. He can, you know, kind of twinkle around with his pan flute, if you know what I'm saying.
That will be fantastic. All right. And what are you bringing? You're bringing a bassoon?
I just changed it. I'm bringing a I'm bringing an oboe. I'm going to bring an oboe.
You know what? Thank God you said that, because I was going to say, you know, I've actually got a bassoon that I'm now using in my act.
Thank God.
So if you wouldn't mind bringing an oboe, and we'll do a whole little chamber music kind of thing.
That'd be fantastic. It's Rosemont, the MB Financial Park, right off of your tri-state situation and very close to O'Hare if you're flying. 847-813-0484. And zanies.com. Get your tickets for, again, Friday night with Toomey out in Pheasant Run, and then Saturday at 4 o'clock, there's shows for everybody. I appreciate you doing it, and I hope everybody goes to timcav.com, because assuming that's still your website.
It is still my website.
You can get everything Tim does there, including some of the funniest songs you're ever going to hear.
Right, but not on this show this morning.
Little guitar.
Because we didn't talk about this.
I have got,
all right, but,
I got to pay attention. I'm sure I saw an email. All right, I'll talk to you later, buddy. And I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
We'll see you Saturday.
There you go. That's Tim Cavanaugh.
Really going to bring a bassoon.
There's nothing funnier than an interview with a friend that goes off the rails, isn't there?
Nothing.
Hi to everybody at CLTV. If we haven't said hi to you this hour, I feel like we did, but we'll see.
We did.
And we'll come back and turn it over to Bill and Wendy here in just a second at 720 WGN.